Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 8, season 9. We're at the thin end, or the thick end of the wedge. I'm not too sure which way Ronaldo will do that. But anyway, we're getting towards the end of this season, and it's getting towards the end of the WRC season and many other seasons, which I'm sure we're going to talk about certainly before the end of this season and going well into season 10 of the podcast. Folks, thank you all so much for the downloads last week. We've had some really, really good downloads, and after the little plea we put out, people are starting to rate us and stuff on iTunes. That really does help, by the way. So if you are listening to us on iTunes, please, 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 if you could leave us a little review, even click subscribe, commit to it, commit to this relationship. We committed to you nearly 2 years ago. Commit to us now. There you go. Anyway, I digress. On my left, I have Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And on my right, I have a very croaky, feeling sorry for himself, Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, yeah, I am a little bit croaky this week, but I will do my best to man up and get through it.
Right, good, because it's been a big day in news. There's even been a podcast out already about this today. Bless it, Bex already had Michelle Nandon on from High and I. Obviously, the big news today. I'm sure lots of people will tell us they knew this before it all got released anyway. It was a tiny bit of a shock to me, Jack Bennion, this news. And now it was even a bit of a shock for you guys because you kind of hinted towards it in MN this week. But it's been confirmed today Andreas Mikkelsen is joining Hyundai for the remaining rounds of WRC.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, isn't it? I suppose everyone's seeing the news now, so we don't need to go too much into exactly what he's going to be doing. But what on earth were Hyundai doing? Why have they not done this earlier in the season? This has cost them a shot at the Constructors' Championship, because if they'd have had Mikkelsen, Nerville, and then a rotation of Sordo and Paddon in the car, we might be having a completely different Constructors' battle, and we might even be looking at a different Drivers' Championship, because if Mikkelsen was there to take some points away from the other guys, like Tanak and Evans has done for Ogier, then we might be having an even more exciting WRC season than we've had already. So, yeah, really odd one, this one, for me. If they've been able to make this change now, why haven't they done it earlier in the season?
Strong argument, and it sounds like you've had coffee today, Jack Bennion.
I'm just very passionate about this. I can tell. What was the point in making the change now with three rallies left when they could have actually had a chance at winning the Constructors' Championship this year?
No. I'll completely and utterly have that. Ryan Champion?
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate and come from the other side. Maybe Michelle Nandon was committed to his driver lineup and thought these drivers were going to do the job for him. We've talked about various drivers with the various struggles this year, haven't we? And Hayden Paddon being one of those who's had a mixed season, an up and down season. And yeah, I guess that was it. I guess because we talked about this at the start of the year when Ogier became free, we wondered why Hyundai weren't interested in Ogier at that point. And I guess it's been a similar situation with Mikkelsen. They were committed to their three-driver lineup. They've stuck to it, but they've a good year, but certainly not as good as it could have been. So, yeah, like you said, they've made a late change now. And obviously, it shows how important the manufacturer's title was to them, or is to them. And it'll be, it'll be good to see Mikkelsen in a Hyundai. It'll be interesting. Obviously, we'll come to what it means for Citroën in a minute. But yeah, I think they were just committed to that three driver lineup. But things have come to the crunch stage in the Manufacturers' Championship, and he was still available, so they've made the change.
Jack, Michelle Nandon was keen to point out that there's nothing being confirmed yet for 2018. This is a three round deal. Do you think that's true? I think even Bex raised an eyebrow and asked the question. You know, surely there's been a big dangling of a carrot to convince Andreas to move over, and there was nothing really back on that point as such. But there has to be, because, you know, off the back of Germany, Andreas was in a really, really strong position with Citroën, surely.
Yeah, you would have thought so, wouldn't you? But judging by the headline in Motorsport News this week, Mikkelsen tipped for Hyundai in 2018, I'd suggest that our man David Evans is fairly sure that this deal means more than just three rallies. So obviously, MN goes to print on Monday, so David's obviously has can prove that he's been a bit of ahead of the curve on this one with knowing about this on Monday. So I trust what he says, and he's a man in pulling all the strings and making things happen when it comes to journalism and the WRC. So if he says Mikkelsen's tip for 2018, I'll definitely go with that.
Right, I think we're all convinced that it's a 2018 deal, as I say, that Jack just mentioned it there. this is what we've got now, haven't we? Are we currently blessed, perhaps, for the first time in many, many years, that we've got drivers that can be brought in like this? Because, you know, it's not that long ago, really, where teams did kind of just stick with the driver lineups because, in fairness, there wasn't maybe anything better out there, anything more preferable.
Well, obviously, the last-minute pull-out of Volkswagen has meant that there is a supply of drivers, isn't there? And we're also, I guess, we're still at a stage where we've got far more drivers than we have cars, because we've talked about it on recent editions of the show. There's good young drivers that are going to find it difficult to break into a top-line drive now, because we've got established drivers in there. We haven't got many people moving out. And, yeah, it's an interesting situation where we've probably got more drivers than we have drives around. They're all fighting over these key drives. And we're seeing a situation where if somebody is having a difficult time, then they're getting replaced. We've sort of said about it, somebody like Pontus Tiedemann, who's coming through the ranks and done everything he can do, and seeing his former teammate, Esko Pekkalampi, move up, but there isn't probably the space for him now. So Tiedemann is going to struggle for a drive. We're now seeing Hayden Padden get pushed out temporarily. We're seeing Craig Breen sitting out again in Spain. So this rotation thing is something that we haven't seen for a while in WRC. You know, we used to see it in the past where specialists were coming in for certain rallies, but we're now seeing teams rotating drivers. It could change again if we go to 3 point scoring cars as well. A lot of drivers around, not enough drives.
Jack, I guess the big question is, where does this leave the likes of, well, Hayden, first and foremost, obviously, for this year? It's obviously a very disappointing for him and things like that. There has been talks already about, you know, Hyundai possibly running 4 cars. I think it was even mentioned very, very early on in the year. Where do we see Hayden moving on from this?
I think the only way I can see this moving forward is Mikkelsen and Nerville in the Hyundais, and then a third shared between Danny Sordo and Hayden Padden. I think that's the only realistic way I can see this working. I'm not sure Hyundai want to run 4 cars unless the FIA sort of processes rule they've been talking about changing the rules up a little bit in terms of how the points are scored. So it'd be interesting to see whether they do run a fourth car, but we've got to accept that the prospects there, that potentially Hayden and Danny could be sharing a car next year, which, you know, if I was a Hyundai boss, you know, I'm not or a fan, I wouldn't necessarily be happy about that. But I think if you've got 2 cars there, Mikkelsen and Nerville is a very strong 2-car lineup that you really want in your team, really.
Right. We know they're good friends. Does that work?
Well, I guess we'd have to see, wouldn't we? Like Jack said, it's a strong lineup. I certainly wouldn't rule out Hyundai running 4 cars. We've seen them run 4 frontline cars before. It's fair to say their nice big service structure can happily accommodate 4 cars. They seem to have the fact that they brought Mikkelsen in like this proves that, you know, the budget's there to do the job, and there's certainly no shortage of funding there. It wouldn't surprise me to see them go to 4 cars for next year. But it is, you know, having said that, to commit to 4 cars in every rally is a big undertaking. So let's see what happens there. But yeah, Mikkelsen and Neville as the 2 key drivers in the team, very, very strong lineup. But I still think we'll see Hayden Padden come back from this. You know, this isn't the last of Hayden Padden. Yeah, he's had a tough season. And as we've said, you know, these 2017 cars are spectacular, but they do seem to be quite difficult cars to get the best out of in all conditions. Certainly all the cars haven't been consistent in all conditions, and that's meant that some drivers have got on with them well, and others have got on with them when they're working and not at other times. And, you know, Hayden's been one of those drivers that when it's worked for him, he's been great, but there's been a lot of times where the car just hasn't quite worked for him. But, you know, I think we'll see him come back from this. We know he's got a very strong link to the Hyundai brand. obviously in his homeland, and, you know, a big market in not only New Zealand but Australia, where he's a very popular character as well. So, you know, I'd like to see Hayden come back from this. He's got further rallies this year to, you know, to prove how valuable he is to them.
Jack, we've seen Hayden, of course, in an R5 car. Do you think that could be a possibility for part of next year as well?
I don't think so. I think, like I said before, I think he'll be sharing a car with Danny Soller. That's certainly what David Evans seems to be suggesting in his story in MN this week. And like I said before, you know, wouldn't like to go against what he says is usually bang on or there or thereabouts. So if he thinks that they're going to be sharing a car, I think that's the most likely option.
Now, I guess the other thing that has now happened, of course, we were all probably getting comfortable with the idea that Andreas Mikkelsen would be wearing red in 2018. That clearly now is not the point. Eve Maton, I think you, Rye, were retweeted something very, very quickly yesterday that Eve Maton put out, wishing Andreas the best of luck. I'll come to you first on that, because I've seen your comments probably first. Where do we see Citroën now?
Well, they've now made it public that they're chasing Sebastian Ogier. And, you know, Yves Maton is certainly not hiding that now. You know, he's put out there an interview with, French, I think it was L'Equipe, and he's put out that interview that they're chasing Sebastian Ogier, and that's who Citroën want. And that if they'd gone for Andreas Mikkelsen, that could have compromised their ability to get Ogier in terms of the funding to do that. So, you know, they've really nailed the colours to the mast, if you like, in that regard, and that's Citroën's aim. So, firstly, from an immediate point of view, obviously the great news for us is that it's Chris Meek back in the team unquestionably, and hopefully now he's got the remainder of the season to, you know, to get Nathan Keelan to prove that he can do the job, which we know he can, but hopefully Chris has now got the chance to get things back on an even keel. But, you know, Citroën definitely aiming for Ogier. Will they get him? I don't know. I mean, I put something out on Twitter a little bit earlier on. It would be interesting to see where Ogier would have been in a C3 to this point in the season. Would he be fighting for the World Championship now? I don't know. Would have been a long shot, I think, that one. M Sport have given him a car to fight for the championship, but we know he wants to see continued development. We know he wants to see further investment. He also probably wants to see a bigger bank balance. And I think the other thing that you have to look at with this, how many times has Sebastian Ogier won the World Championship? You know, and if he wins it again this year, this could be his final move. And, you know, to finish his WRC career off with Citroën, where he started, albeit there's been a bit of animosity in there before that, but if he could finish his career off with a French team, with a further title or two titles for a French manufacturer, you know, that would fit very nicely. And maybe he sees himself going off to Dakar in a few years with Monsieur Loeb in a Peugeot. Who knows?
I just wonder, you know, just before I bring you in, Jack, is this another thing as well, perhaps, that somebody like Sebastian Ogier, even if he wins with M Sport this year, the concept of going to, obviously, back where Rise just said there, back to the beginning, and trying to win another world championship, that would be three world championships with three different marks. And I think that possibly could be, because I get the feeling, Jack, that he's not going to stick around to try and beat, you know, the nine times. Would you have that?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I don't think anyone expects him to stay in the sport quite as long as Sebastian Loeb did. But it's really interesting for me. I've seen a lot of people getting very excited about this whole Ogier to Citroën thing, and for me, it's not a straightforward move for Ogier at all, because, you know, for me, and I think we've talked about it a lot on the program, there's a couple of elements of moving to Citroën that do bring disadvantages, as well as, you know, obviously it's great to drive for a manufacturer team, but we've seen some of the stuff going on with Chris Meek this year, where he's been talking about people in the company who haven't backed him and things like that. There's the political aspect of driving for a manufacturer that can be a negative. And Sebastian doesn't have that at the minute. You know, at the minute, he's got Malcolm and he's got a load of guys up in Cumbria who really want to win rallies, and that's all they want to do. And that's what they're geared towards doing. So, you know, Citroën's trying to sell cars and M Sport's trying to win the World Rally Championship. The other thing is, I think there's been a few alarm bells in terms of budget for Citroën, and the Mikkelsen one sort of strikes me as another one. Whereas, you know, if you look at Citroën for next year and they really want to win the World Championship, why aren't they going after Mikkelsen and Ogier? If you know, you've got to get the drivers in there if you think you're going to fix the car and you're going to get everything sorted, then why aren't you going after the best drivers? If it is a budget thing, like some people have kind of alluded to, then why would Sebastian move from the M Sport team to Citroën? If they've not got the budget, if they've not got carte blanche to fix that car, then why would he go to a car that potentially isn't going to win the world championship when he's already in a pretty decent spot as it is? Obviously, the best place for Sebastian to go would be Hyundai, in my opinion, because they've clearly got the budget to keep moving forward and they've already got a very successful car, but that's obviously not an option for him now. So he's got a very difficult choice ahead of him, I'd say.
But you think the key to all this is where that kind of predominant Red Bull livery is on a car? Because obviously this year it's gone over to the M Sport Fiesta for specifically for Sebastian Ogier. I don't know whether that's I think that's more to do with his relationship with Red Bull. Now, if Red Bull went over to Citroën, would that tip the balance? Is that where that balance of budget could come from? Don't know.
No, I don't think that's enough to make that kind of difference.
Okay. I think, like you say, I think the Red Bull sponsorship that went to M Sport was largely Sebastian's personal sponsorship. And yes, they may have tipped a little bit more budget in there to make sure Sebastian got a drive for the year with M Sport, got out in that car. But I don't think it's significant Red Bull backing in terms of what a World Rally Team costs to run.
Yeah, but I'll take that. But by the same token, if, you know, because obviously the glory years of kind of the middle, certainly the bulk of the Citroën years had Red Bull livery on, didn't it? I just wonder if you know, obviously there may be some budget still available based on the fact that obviously the Volkswagens, you know, they were running three, you know, Red Bull livery cars. Now they're just running, currently running the Fiesta. Obviously they've got the drivers that they back and stuff like that. I just wonder whether once we get to the end of this contracted year, if you like, that if that all becomes available because Ogier is available again, does that dictate where that goes? Does Sebastian Ogier necessarily go where, you know, the predominant car livery goes, is the point I'm trying to make?
Well, I think if you look at it in that sense, then why didn't Red Bull follow that for Toyota as well? For me, it's a Sebastian Ogier deal that Red Bull have got there, for the fact that Red Bull hasn't appeared on Latvala's car in an extensive, you know, amount. And when we saw Mikkelsen come back to Citroën, there was no sign of a, you know, extensive Red Bull livery on the Citroën either. So for me, that's a Sebastian Ogier deal. And I think most of that Red Bull stuff coming in would have paid for, you know, at least part or paid for Sebastian's wages. So I think that's a, for me, that looking at how it is from the outside, that's definitely a Sebastian specific thing.
Mm. Having said that, to maybe say there is a possibility there. Obviously, we've seen the PSA, the Peugeot Group, close alliance with Red Bull recently. I mean, obviously, we've seen Red Bull significantly feature on the Dakar car, and Loeb's Pikes Peak car was obviously Red Bull sponsorship with Sebastian Loeb's backing. Likewise, the Rallycross cars as well. So, whilst that's all Peugeot, obviously, we've heard recently that it's now all one motorsport department. So, maybe there is a chance of Red Bull going in there.
Well, there you go. That brings us very nicely onto the new R5 car that's being produced by that particular organisation. Jack, you guys have ran some pictures of it in today's edition. Obviously, there's been a couple of things flying around on Twitter. I'm guessing there's not going to be a 208 R5 car, bearing in mind that everything's being pooled together now and all resources are going to be channeled into the C3 R5.
There seems to be no talk of any sort of Peugeot involvement in an R5. So, yeah, I'd go with that at the minute. It's very, very quiet on that front. And I think if they were planning to homologate some sort of Peugeot R5 car for next year, then we definitely would have broke cover by now, because you're looking at, you know, the January homologation date and you've got a lot of paperwork to do before that. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say we're not likely to see a Peugeot anytime soon. But for me, this is a strange one. What a strange time to release an R5 car on the basis that you know the WRC car that it's based on is completely unpredictable, and you're relying on people buying this car as a customer. So for them to bring this out now is quite bold, in my opinion. But hopefully, you know, they can put some good drivers in the car and maybe get some good results with it, improve its reliability, and then they can move from there. It's going to be, I think it's going to be quite exciting, because I think they're going to have to put some decent people in this car and do some big events and win some big events to prove that this car is better than the WRC version, or at least more reliable. So I think it could be exciting, and like looking over the next sort of few months and into the start of next year, because I think we could see, you know, this car doing some pretty high profile events, I'd say.
Right, they've gone straight to Riga. They've gone with Riga suspension straight away with the ZF transmission. So I'm guessing maybe lessons learned already from the World Rally car. It's kind of almost reverse engineering this, isn't it? It's kind of gone the other way.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what I'd have to check on the DS3 to see what the DS3 had in. But I mean, obviously with R5, you know, the dampers are much more off the shelf items. So maybe not quite sort of surprising. But I don't know. I think the timing of it is, yeah, OK, from the outside, maybe they should be focusing on the WRC car. But ultimately, you know, these things are quite a long lead time in terms of a project. And, you know, I wouldn't say the biggest influence on this, the success of the R5 car, is necessarily the performance of the WRC car. But they still have to get over the old DS3, because the DS3 R5 wasn't the most reliable car. It wasn't the most successful car. So like Jack said, it isn't just the stigma of the current WRC car they've got to get over. It's actually their own R5 car. So obviously the DS3 has been out there for a few years. It's won on occasions, but there's been a lot of unreliability with it, and also been a lot of unreliability with the sister Peugeot product. Could there still be a Peugeot R5 car? That wouldn't surprise me if they did bring a Peugeot version out eventually, because ultimately these are customer cars, aren't they? They want to sell customer versions of these. And what we have seen with Peugeot is we've seen quite a lot of Peugeot dealer teams support the R5 project. So if you think of Italy, for example, you know, Peugeot Italy always run a car, or I think maybe Spain have been running a car as well. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me completely if there was a Peugeot version eventually.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents, or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Some other bits and pieces before we crack on. The name Solberg, Jack Benyon, is back with us again. It's in this instance Oliver Solberg, who's been playing in a 208. He's been doing some of the junior championships, but targeting WRC in 2018.
Yeah, Oliver's 15, and some people have seen him driving his dad's World Rallycross car from last year, the Citroen, which he's very entertaining in, and also had some pretty good results in as well. So he's looking at doing GB next year, which should be quite similar to Kyle Robin-Pera. It'll be one of the first major events after he passes his driving test. So he's it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. The most interesting part of that story for me is that he's enrolled in the FFSA, the sure. Academy in France.
That's exactly where I was going to go next with this. Go on, sorry, Jack.
No, that's fine. No, for me, I just find it really interesting that I don't seem to remember any sort of any Scandinavian drivers off the top of my head actually going into this academy from I'm sure Ryan will be able to think of some. Obviously, we've seen Scandinavian drivers go and compete in France and Italy and places like this. You know, we've seen Robin-Pera do it this year, but actually enrolling in the FFSA academy is quite unusual from my memory.
I genuinely thought this was the FFSA support and the infrastructure and stuff of that was for French drivers only. You know, obviously we all remember, I suppose, the Super 1600 Saxo with you know, for Sebastian Loeb. We kind of remember it from that's where I kind of first remembered seeing it. But I thought this was kind of, you know, that organization was for French drivers only.
Well, it is the French governing body of motorsport, isn't it? So maybe there's two separate things here. You know, we used to see in the FFSA, I actually put funding into French drivers, but you know, it may be that the academy and the process with which the Sebastian Loebs, the Sebastian Ogiers have gone through, maybe it's something that anybody can actually enroll into, but the actual funding would go to a French driver. Only guessing on that one, but it would be unusual if the funding from the French motorsport governing body went to a Norwegian driver, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. There you go. Jack Benyon.
It could be Swedish, actually.
Which one? What were we talking about? Swedish?
Well, yeah. Where, is he Swedish or is he Norwegian?
He's Norwegian, isn't he?
We're talking about Oliver?
Yeah.
Yeah, Norwegian.
Is he definitely? Because he lives in Sweden.
I'm fairly sure he's Norwegian. I'll check that anyway.
There you go, folks. You know how to you get involved.
And wasn't his mother Swedish?
Yes.
Isn't Sweden?
Pernilla's Swedish, yeah.
Yeah.
So he lives in Sweden. He's got a Swedish mother, but he's still Norwegian. Is that what we're saying?
Because of his father.
You've got me thinking now. I don't want to.
I'm just putting that out there because we always, you know, we do slip with our nationalities.
Only once or twice.
Now and again, so, you know.
But I'm just
maybe maybe he's Estonian. He's been doing Estonian rallies. Maybe he's actually Estonian, like, you know.
Let me put this to you then, Ryan Champion. Is Finlay a Yorkshireman or is he a Cumbrian?
No, he's definitely a Yorkshireman.
I'm gonna put my neck on the line, Tony, and say that Oliver's Norwegian.
I'm gonna go with you, Jack Benyon. I'm gonna go with you. I think this is just.
And he drives a Peugeot Norway, so let's.
They put money into the program as well. So I think Ryan's just starting to lose something now.
Throwing it out there, I was just thinking, I know they live just over the border in Sweden and his mum's Swedish, so I just did wonder, because if you look at somebody like Nico Rosberg, obviously, his very successful father was Finnish, but he's German, so there we are.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, folks, moving on. Believe it or not, we're nearly at any other business.
And I've just solved the problem. If we're relying on the always reliable EWRC, who says Norwegian, so there you go.
Okay, thanks for that. Boy, have you got strong any other businesses this week?
You'll be the judge of that.
Okay, fair dues. And as you spoke up first, Jack Benyon, you're going to do yours.
Are we doing any business right now?
Yeah, unless you want to talk about something else.
No, I thought we may go to the BRC, but I can do that as my own business if you like.
Well, when is BRC? When are we in the Isle of Man?
Not this weekend, the weekend after.
So are we going to do that next week?
Well, yeah, we can do, but I was going to talk about Ocean Price pulling his entry.
Well,
being a championship contender, I thought that was quite significant.
Well, no, absolutely. I wasn't. I was going to. That was going to be a little bit part of my any other business. But we're,
okay. I'll do my own business.
It's fine. I think we should discuss it because I wouldn't mind. I know Ryan worked with Ocean at the beginning of the year as well. I think he did some of the stuff over at Suttles. So it'd be quite good to get Ryan's perspective on this as well. Yeah, folks, sorry, if you're not fully up to speed, Ocean Price, of course, has been doing WRC2 and he's been doing the MSA British Rally Championship this year, was in with a shout. He needed a lot of things to go his way still to secure that championship. He's decided to pull his entry and focus on getting ready for 2018. I've just kind of encapsulated that story altogether there. Sorry, Jack Benyon, you go ahead now. You give us your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise. Yeah, I thought, you know, we had quite a few people in contention to challenge Frederick Allen on the last round, but albeit all long shots really, because he's got quite a nice tasty lead sitting there. But yeah, it's just it's odd one from two perspectives. Odd that Osh has got a chance to win the championship and has pulled out, and odd that he's scoring points towards M Sports Teams Championship, and they're going to go with one less car unless they can nominate someone else. So yeah, just a bit of an interesting one. This,
I think they're probably going to nominate Matt, from what I understand. I think Matt Edwards is the man that's been.
Sounds like you've read today's MN.
Yes, that's exactly what I've done. Ryan Champion, what's your take on it?
Well, I mean, obviously, Ocean was doing the British Championship to win the British Championship. It looked for a while like he had a good chance of that. And then, you know, the last two rallies have, you know, not only have they not gone his way, but they've ruled out any chance of him winning that title. So, you know, at the end of the day, these rallies have to be paid for, and you've got to do the sums, and you've got to work out if it's good value to do the rally. And if if you've got plenty of money and plenty of budget, then yeah, of course you would go to the Isle of Man. But you know, maybe he's just looking at the longer game and thinking, well, what's the point in spending, you know, probably the best part of £20,000 to go to the Isle of Man in an R5 car, when that could be put towards next year and you know, maybe a successful bid next year. So I guess, you know, like I said, if you can't win a championship this year, is it worth spending any more money on doing those rallies?
I think it came to, and again, this is purely kind of speculative a little bit as well, but obviously on the last round, I know there was some support. I don't know whether he got any support from Pirelli as well. Jack, obviously he made that tyre switch, which I think we all were a little bit surprised about, all things considered. Where maybe that was the difference that got him out on that rally, and maybe that support's not there for the Manx.
What can I say about this? I don't think Ocean pulling his entry to Rally Isle of Man's got anything to do with tyres. I'll put it that way. But yeah, I think, you know, it's a bit of a shame because he's, like Ryan said, he's been fighting for the championship this year, and he has been very, very close to winning the Nicky Griss stages, and then the Ulster. He was robbed of some points for both for fuel related issues with the car. So yeah, I think, you know, it is a shame to not see him going. I can understand why he's not going. As Ryan said, it's a lot of money to go out there if you've got a long shot of the championship. But it would have been nice to see him off, and it's one of them things. He's had a lot of bad luck this year, and obviously he's spending a lot of money to be there, and bad luck's not really an acceptable kind of excuse for not being in the hunt for the championship when you're spending that much money, I guess.
Absolutely. Right, Jack Bennion, do you any other business?
I'm going to take us to a very not a very small town, but a small town called Ennis in County Clare, which is quite an odd place to start my own business, granted. But it did give me an excuse to put a very nice Impreza at the top of my page on Motorsport News this week, which I was very pleased about. It's a very nice car. It's a Monte Carlo 1997 Subaru Impreza that Colin McRae drove, and which is now owned by Niall Moroney, who some people will know from doing BTRDA events and things like that. But more recently, has been giving this Impreza a bit of a spin around different single venue rallies in the country. But the reason I'm taking us to County Clare is because the Clare Stages Rally, which has been around of the national championship in Ireland for a few years, is not a round of the championship this year, and in looking to kind of generate a bit of interest in the event, given the fact that it's not part of a major championship, they've done lots of different things like raffle off free entries and things like that. So on the day before the event, they'll give away I think it's seven or eight entries altogether. It's five entries to the main field and three to the junior, so there you go, do your maths. But the main thing I was bringing this up was because they've decided to run a Colin McRae If in Doubt Flat Out Perpetual Trophy, which is particularly poignant because the rally is on September the 15th, the date of Colin's death. So with the backing of the McRae family, they've decided to run this trophy for modified class of this rally. So we're going to see some properly sideways escorts flying around Southern Ireland, which is not a rare thing. But I think something about that will have Colin McRae smiling up in the clouds if he was to be watching down. So I think that's a very nice story, and just thought I'd raise that.
It's a good one. It's a good one, mate. I was just looking at that image there. There you go. Lovely thing. Ryan Champion, yours for this week?
Well, my any other business this week is about rally cars we're missing out on in the UK.
I love this one. This is a proper Ryan Champion one. Go on.
Can you guess where this is coming from, by any chance?
No, I can't at the moment, I must admit. I'm not.
Well, this. So today I've been in a forest testing a rally car, and it was one of the more unusual rally cars I would have to say in the UK at the minute, and it is a gravel car, and it's a Porsche Boxster.
Ah. Now,
you might think Porsche Boxster gravel car, but it was great, great car, great fun, and nowadays it could be a real cost-effective rally car, but you're not allowed to build one. Because our current MSA guidelines are that we're not allowed cars over 3 litres in the UK. The only reason the Boxster that I tested today is in existence is because it was on the old logbook system, and therefore it got that grace to carry on. But unfortunately, with our current MSA regulations, you can't go and buy, say, a £10,000 or £15,000 Porsche Boxster, Porsche Cayman, put a diff in it, put a low final drive in it, put some suspension on it, and go and rally it. Because what a great gravel car, but certainly a cheap tarmac car as well. You know, you could get a 300 horsepower Boxster for or 300 horsepower Cayman for relatively little money in comparison to a 300 horsepower Escort, shall we say. And it isn't just the likes of the Porsches we're missing out on. In Holland, for example, there's a one-mate championship for the Nissan 350Z. And there's a lot of cheap Nissan 350Zs out there that, again, we can't use in the UK. The likes of the BMW M3, we can't use in this country now. And obviously, probably one of my favourite rally cars at the minute, we can't use a 911 GT3 car. And a few people saying, well, there was that one. There was the Tuttle car used in the UK because it was logbooked. It went through the RGT process and it was... an FIA legal car, therefore it could compete in the UK, but that's a huge cost. So, you know, I just wonder if it's time for a change, because we're missing out on a lot of cost-effective rally cars here. You know, if you want to go two-wheel drive rallying in the UK, you've got to seemingly spend an awful lot of money on a Mark II Escort, whereas actually there's a lot of cheap, reliable rear-wheel drive cars out there with nice normally aspirated engines. We want variation in rallying, we want cars that make a nice noise, and they don't have to cost a fortune. And by our current regulations, we're missing out on them in the UK.
There you go. Well, the rest of this podcast you're going to love, Ryan Champion, I think it's fair to say. What do you reckon, Jack?
Yes, I would say that he should enjoy it.
I would say so. Very quickly, my any other business, I've got a couple of any other businesses. Due to the fact that my ever-loving other half is due to give birth to our first child literally any time now, we didn't do the Woodpecker at the weekend. So I decided to do a busman's holiday, and I went over to the Rally of 1,000 Cones, Ryan Champion. I went over to the Promenade Stages and I went to watch that rally that we seen advertised when we were over there for dinner. And it was quite good fun, I have to say. And congratulations to everybody who did well on that particular event. If you are listening, we know there's some people who listen. There's been some special mentions. What was your surname again, Jack Benyon?
Benton.
Jack Benton. I meant to introduce you as Jack Benton, but there you go. I didn't.
When I read that, I thought of the. Has anyone seen the video of the dog Fenton? The blokes just shouting Fenton, all that kind of stuff. That's what I thought of.
That was quite frightening. A couple of things. Woodpecker, the rally that we missed. Congratulations to friend of the show and the man who put so much work into Rally for Wales and keeping Forest Rallying going, Jamie Edwards, first overall. The Woodpecker, sitting alongside Paul Bird in the Focus World Rally car. He was really, really chuffed. I had a good chat with him the other day. Anyway, Miami the Business Boys. This week's, on September's Pace Notes is out. I received my copy of it. And it's got a whole section on the retro battle and 1983 BRC battle. And I'm just looking at the Castrol International Wales Rally, the Arnold Clark Scottish Rally, the International Ulster Rally, the Rothmans Manx International. And you're looking through and you're seeing people like Henry Toivonen, Stig Blomqvist, Russell Brooks, Per Eklund, Phil Collins, of course, is there. Now, the reason why I brought this up is that I was going to mention it in relation to, you know, the likes of what we were talking about with BRC and stuff like that. You know, there's a really nice spread here. There's four rallies in the championship, which is that set right? Right. There's only four events that year. That sound about no. Actually, we've been in Mintex and the Rothmans Circuit of Ireland as well. She's going to say I nearly screwed up. But there were six rounds of that particular championship, and it's wonderful to look back on. We're seeing, you know, obviously the Audis were there and things like that, and obviously the Asconas. I just wonder whether in how many years' time it's going to be. In 30 years' time, will we be looking back on this BRC season? There you go. I'm going to leave it there. I'll let you mull that one over. You can fill the silence anytime now if you want. It's all right. Jack?
No, we won't be looking back on this season in 20 years' time, I don't think.
There you go. Ryan Champion?
Unfortunately, we don't maybe have some of the iconic, exciting cars, do we? And that's goes back to what I was just saying. We want to see fun cars, interesting cars, things that sound a bit different, things that look a bit different. And, you know, it's become a little bit, even in these days of R5 cars, yes, R5 cars are, you know, they're exciting and all the rest of it, but they're not quite as exciting as some of the things we've seen in earlier years of rallying.
Ryan Champion, Jack Bengen and I in the next 20 minutes are going to make all your dreams come true. So this next section is for you, Ryan Champion, and for anybody else that loves the idea of a wonderful sounding rally car. Boys, same time, same place next week for this bit.
Absolutely.
Folks, we'll be back after this break with something a little bit special.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Now, a little bit different. We always try to mix it up a little bit. I'm going to let you sit back, relax, and if all's gone well, my wonderful engineer Al is going to play a really, really unique sound in the next 10 seconds, and the man who is responsible for creating that sound will then join us after this bit.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
I really hope, by the way, that you enjoyed what you've just been listening to. It's only fair to explain what we've just done to Alex, because Alex has no idea. We've just kind of grabbed the sound of that amazing machine and put it out for 10 seconds before we got the man behind the machine on. So I felt I should probably explain that, otherwise Alex will wonder what the devil we're talking about. Well, we've just played that amazing machine, and we'll put the links out and stuff on YouTube and everything else. But we wanted to get the man himself on, and Jack's a big fan of his, and I'm going to let Jack Bengen talk to the man behind it, Alex Kelsey.
Hello, Alex. How are you doing? Are you well?
Hi, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good here, and very looking forward to finding out a bit more about your car. Tell us a little bit about the body shell that you started with, and how long ago you actually started, and how long the build took for the car, because it's, I can't wait to hear how it all came together.
Yeah, I guess the whole process started, late 2012 and through 2013, building it and all that. And the biggest thing for me is I just like, you know, making things and designing things. And I guess that's how I ended up, you know, building a car like this. And it had to have that noise and the look. And I liked the look of the Peugeot at the time. And so I changed that around a bit and made it, you know, what it is. So it turned out really cool.
For the listeners at home, what we're talking about here, and you must, absolutely must. Hear that noise again. But we're talking about it's a 208 shell, isn't it, Alex? And it's got a World Series by Renault, which is a lower version of Formula One, a single seater engine in the car, and that's what creates that big noise, isn't it? What made you choose that engine?
There's a couple of things. It was a 207 shell, and then the engines at the time had just come off, you know, Formula Renault World Series, and are sort of obsolete. They changed from the V6 to the V8, so the V6s were all available, and you know, they're in a place in France, and I made an offer on one of the engines, and they took it, and we're away, basically.
Fantastic. One of the really interesting things for me is, if you know, when you actually go on YouTube and watch you flinging this car around, it just looks like a normal rally car. But you've kind of designed everything underneath the shell yourself, haven't you? And built it all in your barn. So tell us a little bit about the extent you've gone to, and how many of the parts you actually have built, and the four wheel drive system as well.
So the chassis and everything's all space frame. There's absolutely no body shell at all. It's fiberglass and carbon. The shell itself, and the drivetrain, the SADAS gearbox and differentials, and then all the hubs and axles and, you know, that kind of stuff, so all stuff that I've made. So it all works together really well.
In terms of the power delivery, how does that work? Because obviously the engine's not designed for a rally car, is it? So how much work have you had to do to kind of make that power accessible, and how accessible is it on a rally stage? How much can you actually get out of the engine?
Well, just because it's a race engine, it makes a lot of horsepower, not so much torque. So, you know, you've got to rev the engine, and that's just how it is. And I don't mind that. I like the sound. You know, that feeling when you get the head on the back of your neck standing up just when you need a shift gear, that's not all bad.
No, it's my, I, do you know what? I just love the image, by the way, of you ordering this engine from France. And what was the morning like when the crate turned up? Was it like all your Christmases?
Oh, yeah. One of those special, you know, racing flight cases. And you lift the top off and there's this, you know, almost Formula One engine I'm about to stick in the back of a rally car.
Now,
it was pretty cool.
When that happens, right, obviously you get that initial excitement, the crate's arrived, you obviously, I assume, you've got, you know where it's going to sit in the space frame and everything else. The moment you press the start button for the first time, that's hairs on the back of the neck stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what the crazy thing was? It actually went. The first time I hit the button, it actually went, and, you know, that took me by surprise even.
I was just going because I assume you don't get a loom with it, nothing like that. You've had to make your own harness management system and stuff like that.
Yeah, I didn't make the harness or the management system. I used a specialist company for that. But, you know, even still, it's just so many little settings. You know, it's got to be all done. And I thought there's no chance this thing's going to go. There's no way. That's it.
Yeah. But what I guess it's always the first for me. Like the first time you obviously you're a designer. You've designed lots of things and stuff like that along with this car and other things as well. But you must have had an idea in your head of what you wanted to achieve with this. Did it exceed? Did you have to go away and tweak it? Did you have to go away and work it again, or was it one of those things that is out of the box? It was exactly what you imagined.
No, it was still one of those projects that developed as you went along as well. You sort of, you know, you had an idea of what you wanted to do and then get a bit, you know, further along and on to the next bit and the next bit. And it just kept developing and got more and more out of control and more crazy, really. But, you know, it was a really neat project. It took a lot longer than I thought. We were planning to, you know, build this thing over almost half the time that it actually took. But, you know, I didn't want to rush it. I wanted to do it properly and sort of really pleased that I did that.
Was there a grand plan for it when you'd finished it? Was the idea was to go and do events with it? Was it going to be a show car? What was the idea for when it was finished?
Well, the idea was, right when I started building it, the New Zealand Rally Championship had just changed their rules and gone from like a Group N style, you know, championship to this open formula. And I thought, well, you know, here's an opportunity to make something that's really exciting and, you know, cool that people want to go and look at. And, you know, I like the challenge of building it and engineering and stuff as well. So, and for me, that was probably the biggest thing is the challenge of building it because, you know, I enjoy that just as much as I do driving it and, you know, making things and, you know, working around problems. And so it was sort of started around that when the rules got opened up. And, that got everything going, really.
Alex, it's not completely random we've decided to bring you on the show at this point in time. Obviously, we've wanted to get you on for a while, but this has been the kind of first chance we've had. But you had an event recently, didn't you? And tell us a little bit about what happened on that event, because it seems to be going quite well up to a certain point, but you had some problems, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, that's just the nature. Kind of like that, you're always going to have problems and you just drive around those problems. Yeah, it was really awesome. I actually haven't done a rally for 2 years. I sort of got burnt out by the whole project and put it in the corner and forgot about it for a little while. And this was the first event driving the car for 2 years. And I think we were second going into the last stage and the front wheel bearing came apart. So that was a bit disappointing. But we had all sorts of issues right through the rally with, you know, no brakes and, you know, just niggling things really took time to get around for a couple of years. And, you know, they don't like doing that. So, we're not quite sure when the next one will be, but I'm thinking maybe Rally New Zealand end of November. So that's another one to look forward to.
I think there needs to be some sort of law brought in New Zealand where you're not allowed to rest that car for 2 years. That's too long. I think there should be some sort of legislation brought in that says Alex Kelsey can only put his MC2 away for 6 months, and that's the maximum period of time, and then you've got to get it back out again after that. What about, you said you talked a little bit about events there. What's the, is there an event that you kind of think in your head, oh, I'd love to take the car out there. It'd be great to kind of get that out and really take it out to that kind of event? Or, is there anything specific that you can think of that you'd like to take it to?
Yeah, there's a couple. Obviously, I think probably the next one for us will be the Rally New Zealand. That's in, I think, end of November. But I've been thinking about going over to the Barbados Rally for the last couple of years as well, so it'd be maybe neat to go and do that next year or something else, maybe I don't know, in the US or something like that. We'll just see, maybe an event like that as well as an event here. I don't think I'll commit myself to a full championship. I don't have time for that at the moment, but just selected events is the most fun. It's nothing professional for us. It's just something that we do with our friends, and we just have a really fun time doing it, really.
How open are the what? Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, what kind of events can you actually compete in New Zealand? Is it pretty open over there in terms of what you can actually compete in, or is there only set events or set championships, or is it quite open for that for your car?
No, it's completely open for the New Zealand Rally Championship. We can run it outright with that car. I don't know how long that's going to be the case, but at this stage, at least for the next couple of years, I think that we can run that car for the outright championship.
Before we let you go, because we realise that we've got you out of bed as well to do this, by the way, we had a guy over here, Alex, and his name was Andy Burton, and I don't know whether you're familiar with Andy Burton at all, whether you've heard the name at all. But he kind of, not quite to the same extent as you, but he built an Alfa Ferrari rally car, for instance,
right,
and had a Ferrari engine in it, and it just sounded spectacular. It sounded like an F1 car in the forest. And then his next evolution of that, and again, he built it like the way you did it. He did it at home in his shed, basically. And then it was the Peugeot. The Peugeot 306 ice racing shell, which had a DTM touring car engine in it.
This was a funny situation, because I thought, I built this thing and I thought, I came across that on the internet and I thought, God, that's amazing, what he'd achieved. And I actually sent him an email and I ended up, talking and meeting him, Andrew, and it was really awesome to, talk and meet with him, because we've sort of done pretty similar sort of thing, really.
Well, that's it, because over here he was beating World Rally cars and things like that, obviously straight out the box, but we had a lot of World Rally cars around at that point, and Andy Burton's car was legendary, and it had a unique fan base as well. There was people who used to just go to the forests just to hear that car, and I can listen, watching the video and listening to obviously what your car does, it's generating that feeling all over again, hairs on the back of the neck stuff.
Yeah, and what he achieved with that car was unbelievable. What a guy. So talented and an engineer and just amazing. And, that's the thing that people don't understand, that these cars, they're not nice to drive at all. They're absolutely horrible things. They're noisy and they're hot and they've got all kinds of issues. And the things you've got to drive around, I've got to lift off sometimes to hear the pavement.
Wow.
And wow. It's just awesome. I wouldn't complain about any of it. But, it's just all you can do is laugh about that. It's so much fun.
Do you think you'll ever see yourself driving a conventional rally car again?
Oh, no. It's not.
Brilliant.
No way.
Alex, thank you. You've made a young man in Jack Benyon very happy. You've also made me very happy. And our co-host, who's not with us in this section, who's just been talking about this very subject about unique rally cars in the first section of the program, I'd no doubt you've made him very happy. And I think that's a really good place to finish where you've just said. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week.
Yeah, awesome, and thanks very much,
mate. We will get you on, so I'd love to know what happens with regards to doing Rally New Zealand as well. Folks, please seek this out. We will put it out there. We'll put it on our Twitter feed, on our Facebook page as well, and everything else. You know where we live. It's absoluterally.co.uk, of course, for the website. It's facebook.com/absoluterally, and it's absolute_rally on Twitter. Folks, thanks for the download. We'll be back same time, same place, in a little podcast hole next week.